Imagine seeing that on TV and just be like, slow news day?
What is this, New York?
Fuck is this bullshit? Yeah.
Why do we give a shit about what's going on over there?
What's the fucking Canucks score?
That's terrible. I should...
Welcome back to Show Me Yours podcast. I'm Jackie Agnew.
I'm Johnny DeVito.
Who we got in the studio?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked, baby. We have the pride of Calgary in the studio today with us. He's come a long way. A very talented comedian, wonderful human being, Joel Slavik in the house, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on. Our first guest in Montreal.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Joel, how are you feeling on this wonderful Sunday afternoon?
I'm good, man. Sun's out. Can't complain.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Getting beautiful. Some nice weather, which is
absolutely.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With a jawline like that, you just got to be just patting bitches off left and right, right? Are they starting to flock to you nowadays, or what?
Keeping it real, keep on rocking in the free world.
100% vague, which means he's getting no bitches. Yeah. Upon further review,
I don't know who's gonna be watching this. So, you know,
that's true.
Real G's move in silence like lasagna.
I've heard that. Which is actually clever because today we are going to be loosely talking about a Kendrick Lamar album.
Yeah,
sure. Kid, Mad City. Coming from a white boy from Calgary going into the world of gangster rap,
yes.
I can see how this would be such an important album to you personally.
you guys are probably expecting me to bring like a Garth Brooks album or something.
I was thinking
Nickelback.
Stomp and Tom Connors.
Yeah. No, I was always a hip hop guy growing up, mm-hmm. and that definitely was not very common.
No, right. I was going to say because like times were changing for like British Columbians. My brother was like heavy into Pantera, and I'm kind of like from the woods, I think would probably be like more Alberta adjacent than I would say like Vancouver in my hometown. So there was a hard change from when like metal and like punk or whatever, when we started to kind of get into hip hop, there was these old heads that were actively standing in the way of us trying to experience music from another culture.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure. No, I feel like there was a lot of that in Alberta too. Like mm-hmm. it was just, you're white, you can't listen to rap.
And for sure.
Like, I don't know. I think good music is good music. I think it should be, you know.
I mean, it's a bold stance to take, but we'll explore it on today's episode.
Get into it.
I came in controversial, so let's dig ourselves out of this hole.
No, we're
the three to discuss this, for sure.
Yeah, we're going to talk about cultural identity and
race politics.
The whitest people ever. We've got a diverse panel.
If there's anything that the internet needed, it's more white people talking about this.
White people opinions. Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
You know, we got them and buckle up and hear them because, they're unfortunately the loudest, I think, still. But fortunately for us, for our careers, for the time being, guys, clock's ticking. So let's get it while we got it.
We got it, man.
Hell yeah, man. So give us a little backstory. What's Joel's life growing up in Calgary?
So I grew up, everybody grows up in the suburbs there. It's pretty much a very suburban city. Grew up in the suburbs, played sports. Big sports family. Played hockey, football.
Nice.
Do you have siblings?
I have an older sister, yeah.
Okay.
She's a teacher in Calgary.
Oh, wow.
What'd you teach?
And she teaches, it's a good question. She teaches like grade 3.
Oh, okay.
So she kind of does everything.
Nice. Oh.
But she was big into choir in high school, so she teaches music and stuff like that.
Oh, very cool, very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Religious background or just into that type of music?
Yeah. Like, you're into rap, you must not be religious. So I was baptized Catholic.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And then growing up, yeah, lucky, yeah. I'm going to heaven. It's crazy.
Nice.
And then growing up, we went to church every Sunday. And then as I got older, it kind of phased out. But I went to like Catholic school and stuff like that.
Oh,
but,
cool.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Was there a moment, where do you stand now in your beliefs of spirituality and religion?
Yeah. we're getting fucking right into it. I love this. I found like, because I went to like Catholic middle school, high school.
Mm-hmm.
And the more, I found it really interesting. But the more I learned about it, the more I was kind of like, you know, I don't really know if I need the rigid structure.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I really, if you were to put a gun in my head, I'd probably say atheist.
Yeah.
But I think religion's great. I think if you need it in your life to be a better person, Godspeed. But Yeah, I don't know. I never really felt, as I got older, I was kind of like made up my own mind.
And you're like, these people are fucking weird on Sundays.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. Yeah.
Yeah. And then all the stuff with the church came out, and I was like,
yes. I had a feeling. Mm-hmm. Why, you know what I mean? Did you ever do like altar boy stuff or anything like
no.
that?
Oh, no, okay. No. Okay. I was never like, we weren't like hardcore Catholic. Like I didn't do, I was just baptized. And then like we would go to like a Christian church where they had like a live band and stuff.
Oh, you guys are out of your mind.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
That's, I mean like, cause I was not baptized or raised with any religion whatsoever. So even going to church every week, I'm like, that sounds pretty hardcore, dude.
It does. Yeah. My family is definitely into it, but like the greatest gift that was ever given to me, was my parents' divorce in like 1992.
Okay.
So at this point I'm 2 years old. My dad's family, extremely Catholic. My mom, I mean, I guess they kind of like believe, I guess, but not like not holding like any denomination or any, you know, any religious you know, team jersey they're wearing. But around 1992, when my parents split up, my brother had been baptized and kind of like, you know, on the way for like communion and all the stuff that you do in the religious or I guess the Catholic religion fucking, you know, there's a path that you're supposed to take.
Yeah.
So anyway, that didn't happen for me because my mom was like, hold on, shit's a little bit wild. So let's just, you know, hold back on baptizing Johnny. And then it became kind of weird because with, you know, I'd still have to go to midnight mass and I'm still a child. So they still have to take you, you know what
it's
I mean?
It's not really your call.
It really isn't. Yeah. but as you start to grow up, I remember, like the middle school that I was in, we were all kind of like the street dirty kids skateboarding and stuff like that. And a friend of mine, Dustin, shout out Dustin O'Connor, he got this offer from his grandparents that he could get baptized at like 13 years old.
Mm.
And I was like, well, that's kind of like weird, right? At this time, I'm, you know, discovering like comedy is kind of coming up. George Carlin is rearing his head and speaking in my ear. And
not
like,
exactly a pastor.
Not necessarily, right? Punk rock is over here very much saying fuck authority and all this stuff. So I'm kind of like at this weird crossroads. And that's when they offered to baptize me. And I was like, guys, I think I'm okay here. And then my friend Dustin came into school with like a full new set of clothes, new shoes, and a brand new skateboard set up. And he's like, all you gotta do is say you believe in God and they will just give you shit.
Really?
Yeah. And I just thought of that as such a pussy way to go about it.
Do you think it was like a hush skateboard or what?
That was the thing. He never spent a day in church. Like, I think it's just a thing that he did for his grandparents.
Just to make them feel better.
Exactly. Okay. Right? So then when that was happening, it inspired my grandmother to try to put a little pressure on me. And I'll never forget what she said. She was like, and remember, Johnny, if you ever want to be a Catholic, you come to me. And at that point, like, I'd been to church a million times. I'd been to, you know, fucking midnight mass and, you know, all types of different things. And I'm like, I'm not on the fucking team already.
Yeah.
Like,
I
found out way later that I wasn't. And then so it like it was cool for me to be like rebellious in a sense or whatever. Like, I was just like, luckily, you know, got to kind of avoid it and talk shit.
The punk rock kind of comes through early.
It did.
Be like,
yeah, it really did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of in the throes of that.
learning. I remember like we used to go to church every Sunday. And like the only thing that I would look forward to is we go to Tim Hortons after.
Decent. Oh,
and I was like, that was when Tim Hortons was like the shit.
Oh yeah, that peak Tim Hortons.
Peak Tim Hortons. Yeah, the church was on the decline, but Tim Hortons was fucking.
It was very much on the incline.
And so I remember that. I remember getting like, you know, honey crullers and shit. And that was just, that was my connection with God. So.
Great cruller.
Yeah. In their heyday, Tim Hortons was the shit.
The brown cups.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. Like. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'm at their chili in a bread bowl. I was,
And then I ate the bowl.
Yeah.
No dishes, baby.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's funny that you can actually like track the rise of Tim Hortons and the fall of the Catholic Church. The
If
you're looking at a graph, that's like exactly where those two intersect.
I think they're related.
Definitely.
So. Yeah. I think someone was getting diddled at Tim Hortons.
Could you imagine if the date that happened was 9/11?
Oh my God.
It all goes back to 9/11.
Sorry, Joel, we spent five
hours. We've been getting way too deep into 9/11.
9/11's back, Joel.
It is.
9/11
is so in.
It's back in a big way. Netflix basically just put out an American propaganda film in 5 episodes on 9/11.
Really?
Fantastic. You're going
to
love it.
Is it like a play-by-play? Or like how does it?
It's about like obviously the event and then all the aftermath and like the 20-year-long wars that sprang out. It's super interesting, but there's a heavy bias in this.
For sure. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. You know, I think that the funniest part that I took away from it was this guy basically being like, it's really weird because 9/11 kind of sparked like the new age of conspiracy theories, you know, and they just kind of like brushes it off and you're like, well,
yeah,
there's a lot of things we could be talking about.
No, yeah, that's the thing. There was actually, I went to the museum. You guys see the museum in New York?
I haven't been there.
I went past the when they were building the Freedom
like
Tower,
the new one,
the memorial site and all that stuff. Yeah,
dude, so the museum is fucking wicked. Like, it's super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, there's like this little panel about all the conspiracy theories, which I thought was interesting that they would actually include that.
Yeah,
very cool.
And a few of them, they just show and like debunk. Mm-hmm. Nothing about jet fuel and steel beams. Mm-hmm.
Really?
But
anything about like the beams cut at the 45 degree? Any of that stuff in there?
Yeah, a little bit of that. Oh, there was cool. the one.
I've heard of a like an insurance fraud one.
Insurance fraud. Yeah. They took out like a huge, like insurance policy like days before and stuff like that. Yeah. There was like trillions of dollars that went missing. Like it was like. There's a whole, I mean, man, it's a deep, we're going to get into 9/11
now.
Oh,
man, this is going to be the second episode in a row that we talk about 9/11 way too much.
We're getting flagged.
Yeah, yeah. Goodbye, all American listeners. Not, yeah.
I apologize to our listeners in general, too. I don't think they want to be listening to this. This is supposed to be like an uplifting Monday morning podcast.
Yeah. Like, the day, the sun is shining, let's get into the tower.
I mean, you can't help but think about it.
You know, every time I see a clear blue sky, I think, man, a plane could
be
flying.
That day was also a clear blue sky.
Yeah,
it was.
Where were you guys on 9/11?
That's a great question, Joel. I'm glad you asked.
I was in grade 2, but I say, so this is kind of the silver lining of 9/11.
Probably the best thing that ever happened to Jackie is 9/11.
Is really? That, so 9/11, I was in grade 2, and we had, as kids, there was all these families that had kids who were my age and my brother's age. So we had like, you know, family, friends, where we all did shit together. And one of my friend's parents was a travel agent. And I don't know if you can put two and two together, but post in the month following 9/11, airline travel was, there were some crazy deals going. And so because of 9/11, the following October, we took a trip to Disneyland. That is absolutely unforgettable. Best trip of my life.
Yeah.
Really like
Survivor
childhood
there.
Defining moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
a lot of
dirt cheap.
Exactly.
Cheap.
Yeah. Deal of a lifetime. So if you think about it,
honestly, it's rare you get a good 9/11 story.
It's
makes you feel good 9/11.
You never
story.
Think about it, right? Because like we were doing this on last week's episode. If you want to go back and think like, man, these guys have problems, but we kind of like it's almost like there's a huge crux there, right? Because like we're you know, for lack of a better term, best day of Jackie's life, we'll say 9/11, of course, the catalyst to
argument to be made
for sure.
Yeah, of course.
For me, it was just more of like I was grade 6, right? So like same thing at this time. This was probably like right around the time of, you know, baptisms being, you know, offered and different ideas kind of coming into my head, and immediately. The government is lying to you, right? Because Y2K was the year before that. So I was already very confused, probably high strung and a little bit had like an active imagination about the fact that maybe my teachers and my parents and my government and everybody is lying to me.
In the sixth grade?
Yes, absolutely.
Holy smokes.
This is absolutely.
I didn't even know what a conspiracy theory was.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, no, we had, it was basically all kind of coming up. It definitely wasn't there yet, but that was like definitely the spark of it because now you have like me being completely afraid, and I would go home and at like about 3:30, Jon Stewart would be on the Comedy Network trying to calm me down and be like, you know, and basically kind of like highlighting all the news that everybody is watching is all bullshit, you know, all of that kind of stuff, right? So I think that that was kind of the catalyst to what turned, you know, me into the person that I am today in a lot of ways, because my mom just woke me up and was like, holy shit, there's some crazy stuff happening. So I went down into the living room. And immediately my first thought was, fuck yeah, we don't get to go to school today. And then I was like, oh no, we're in Canada. We absolutely have to go to school today.
Yeah.
So I do remember getting to school. But this is actually weird because we were watching the footage from this from the propaganda film on Netflix. And I think that the way that they had described the because they have like a time, like a timed out, you know, kind of like a play by play of how that morning took place.
Mm-hmm.
And the time that they said that the second plane hit the tower.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily line up with the time that I would be going to school.
It would have been really early, right, on the West
Coast.
Yeah,
because of the, the time change.
Exactly.
Yeah. It would have been like 6 a.m.
It would have been 3 hours before.
Because that clicked with me, too. I'm like, because we were so young, right? So you had this idea of like when I found out. I was like, I was probably fucking sleeping. Mm, like, yeah. I was probably completely unaware of what was going on.
I remember the shock of the second plane hitting the second tower. But I don't remember if that was in my mom's living room. And then she's like, okay, time for school. Mm. And she drove us to school. Or because I remember walking into my middle school and into like the library door entrance. Because I remember coming there and seeing like everybody like piled into that side and just like I was surrounded by the TV. So I remember walking into that. And I think they were just playing the footage over and over again or whatever. Right. But I have a very clear image of coming into the library in my sixth grade and just seeing a fucking plane just going and having my entire student body just losing their fucking
mind. Imagine seeing that on TV and just being like, slow news day?
What is this, New York?
Fuck is this bullshit? Yeah.
Why do we give a shit about what's going on over there?
What's the fucking Canucks score?
That's terrible. I should.
No, well, that was the
worst things have been said on this podcast.
Totally. Oh my God.
I believe we have
133 episodes that will bury
that will
us.
Never see the light of day.
And 45 more minutes here to go.
Yeah. That's it.
It's fine. I do think that, I remember being like, also like fascinated with crime and stuff like that. Like I had like books on Al Capone and all these like weird different things. I'm like fascinated by heists and things like that. And I remember getting like being in class and then basically this plane flying into the thing and then our teacher basically trying to tell us what was happening, and within like that morning to by the end of that day it was like a war on the Middle East already. Know what I mean, right?
And it was immediate.
100%, right?
Like, people didn't even need all the information. They just heard what they want. I mean, it's the same thing as now, right?
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, I feel like now we have better access to information with all the social media. But
sure.
I don't know. People just hear what they want to hear and just, you know.
Well, it's funny, like, watching the documentary, too, because obviously immediately everyone wanted vengeance, and so it made it so easy for them to go into the Middle East. But they're talking about, they're like, yeah, so they know, and they've done in the documentary, there's a whole episode prior explaining, you know, how terrorism was building in Afghanistan, how the U.S. was giving them weaponry and training them, and you know how the background of
all through the 90s
the background of all of that. And so then we see it happen and then see the outfall, and they're like, yeah, so we knew like the American government knew that there was a lot of like really active terrorist groups in Afghanistan, and we knew that there was a lot of active you know, big prominent members of terrorist group being held in Afghanistan. And so they invaded Iraq.
You gotta love it. Like, you
they're like, close enough.
Yeah,
whatever.
You follow the logic here, like, perfectly. Yeah. Where they get to this point where it's obviously about oil and it's obviously about all that shit. So, like, basically, your war is happening in Afghanistan with all the people that are potentially, or, like, you know, so, as they say, is responsible, you know what I mean, for the loss of 3,000 innocent lives. Mm-hmm. And they're like, but we're pretty sure Saddam's got WMD.
He's gotta be somewhere around.
And then it's like the whole thing, like it peaks, and you're like, oh, this is 2003 now. WMDs, we remember this. You know,
maybe if we blow enough stuff up, he'll come out.
Like, yeah. We're like, we understand there's problems over there, but this country seems to have a lot more oil. Yeah, so two birds with one stone kind of thing.
Oh yeah, and that whole thing, and like the mission accomplished, you know what I mean, speech on the on the aircraft carrier. Do you remember that? Fascinating, right? All of that shit. It was really just like a cover-up to think that like David Blaine really got away with the craziest terrorist act I think that's ever been committed in the 21st
David
century.
David Blaine.
The fact that he's gotten away with this for this long and nobody's even pointed a finger in his direction is honestly upsetting to me. But
I mean, well, you heard it here first.
Well, yeah, exactly, right?
David Blaine.
Yeah, well,
we know you're listening.
David Copperfield.
Yeah, David we ride with Copperfield.
Yeah.
I mean,
Copperfield gang over here.
Y'all can go fuck yourself because it's Penn and Teller or bust. Oh, okay. There's only one magic duo.
We're just talking strictly David magicians.
Sorry. In the world of David, my fault.
Gun to my head, I'm Copperfield.
Well, that's the thing, is that each magician is out there trying to one-up, you know what I mean, the next magician. And David Copperfield famously made the Statue of Liberty disappear.
Yeah.
Now, this is on television, a lot of mirror work. It's been, you know, like debunked in a lot of ways. And what better way for David Blaine to one-up David Copperfield than by making two big, much, I mean, the let's say the centerpiece, the most iconic buildings of the most iconic skyline in the world, right? If David Blaine's going to actually make these things disappear, he's going to actually do it in a different way.
He did a trick where he made, like, the towers disappear?
Yes, by flying like years two planes before. Into
Okay. So Osama's the fucking
It's a scapegoat.
It's a classic
way.
David versus David situation that we're seeing play out here.
We've seen it time and time again. And
you're not fooling me this time.
No. You can't just say, like, every Bin Laden's a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You raid his cave and he's just got American porn in there. You know what I mean?
He's like dude.
He had exactly. He's a girl.
Okay.
All right.
This is a take I can't defend. Okay. but we got there. We got.
I was seeing how far I could push it.
I was flirting with it a little bit.
If you're wondering, Joel draws the line at Bin
Laden. Like, just barely though.
Lights are on. He's gonna crack. Exactly. Lights are on.
Okay, so growing up in Calgary, and then you go to Concordia.
Yeah.
So what makes you decide to go to Concordia, other than the fact that you couldn't get into McGill?
Yeah, it's a good call.
That's a good, that's a good point. So I was getting recruited to play football, and I had a few options kind of around the country, and I got a visit, like they flew me out for a visit at Concordia, and I saw the city, I saw the school, and I was like, this is fucking sick. So,
nice.
So it was between Concordia and University of Alberta in Edmonton. So
you hear about this in the States a lot of like, you know, like this is like the only time that I've heard of like a Canadian school kind of doing this.
So they do recruiting. It's a lot less than the States because the States, they just have money to blow. They still recruit like kind of all over the country. I play with a lot of guys from the States and stuff. And then once I graduated, I got a job here. So I just stuck around and honestly, it's, you went to school here. It's an amazing place to go to school. So and it's the best, I don't know, in my opinion, it's the best city in Canada. But.
Yeah. I mean, it was so because it's such like a great city to be a student in. But then when I graduated, I just immediately left. I didn't even think about staying. But then however many fucking years later, like 8 years later, ended up coming back. Because I mean, and it is like the best city, not only because of just like how it's like so different from any other city, but also like in terms of affordability and just being able to do, you know.
Yeah.
If you want a city that has fun and you can afford to live in, it doesn't really like, I mean, if you, Canada's not very big as far as like, you know, metropolitan areas and places that you would want to live. Right. So like if you're going to go, if it's not Vancouver, then British Columbia can go fuck itself. You know what I mean? Shout out to Kelowna, but it's still like too small.
Party town.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
There's like a
Kelowna's fun, but like I lived in the Okanagan for a long time, and as soon as tourist season is over, it becomes just another shithole like the rest of them. Oh yeah, Vernon is incredibly violent and tons of crime and shit like there. You know. So it's like it's not really ideal. You know, you go to Alberta and it's like Calgary or Edmonton.
Yeah.
Get fucked.
I mean, Victoria has like kind of a nightlife, but it is also definitely like it's an older demographic there.
It's,
though we had like fun there as kids and stuff going out.
Sure.
I feel like it's
shit,
older, and then like same thing like students.
Yeah,
it's very
like
very student driven.
Yeah,
no, a lot of friends go to UVic, and they said it was a great time. And it's beautiful.
I had, I mean, like, cause I in all like my obviously when I was at McGill, all like the summers I would come back home and work at home, and so a lot of my like going out years were spent in Victoria, and definitely there's like a big like party scene there, but. It is a super small city. It's kind of like more of a big town
right?
than
like
it is a city.
Limited.
Yeah.
I feel like if you got to take a ferry to get there, you're on a bender. Yeah. You know, you got it kind of fuels 100%. The, you know, you're like, but we're on a fucking island. Like, we can't even leave if we wanted to.
Really? When she took me to the island for the first time, I went there, and I'm a bit of an idiot, but I had no idea like how big and like modern it is.
Yeah.
I was like, where'd they get all this fucking concrete? I had no idea that they were, you know, capable of doing everything that they'd done on the mainland there.
Yeah.
But then, you know, keep going west, Saskatoon.
I've heard Saskatoon is not bad though. Like this compared to Regina.
If we make our way back to a Kendrick Lamar album at some point, today, then it should be mentioned that when this record came out, I was working in Saskatoon as a third year plumbing apprentice, and it was boom and bust always through through construction and stuff like that. So after like the oil boom kind of like went out, we were not necessarily working in town, but we were looking to make more money to be flown out to places and try to make a little bit more cash than we were making in town. So I got flown out to Saskatchewan to build. Have you ever been to the city at all?
I've driven through Saskatoon. There's a massive
hockey arena, and not like a massive hockey team there. So I think their junior team. I think yeah. So they play at this place, and there's a Best Western attached to this parking lot. So I just spent there for like 3 months. The trucks would show up, and I would just install every fucking toilet and every sink in this place. And it was shitty. It was good money, but this record came out, and I would sit in a Tim Hortons across the parking lot, and my buddy would just
right back to Timmy's baby.
Man, he would be nonstop about this because at the time. I'm very, I don't know why, but I'm very stubborn in the sense that like I like what I like, and it takes me a minute to get new shit. And I do think that this album, for better or worse, kind of garnered in a new era of hip hop.
For sure.
Yeah.
That I don't necessarily enjoy everybody that's coming out.
Yeah.
But Kendrick is, it became very clear that, well, like this guy is something special.
Oh, just it was exceptionally like, talented. 100%. It was incredible.
Like that early 2010s. Yeah. That
totally.
Era of hip hop.
When like Drake and Kid Cudi and all that stuff. Boy. I was like, this is like fucking ruining everything. But Schoolboy Q, Kid Cudi,
Absol,
and Pusha T finally got his like big push after the clips and stuff like
that. Even if you see like Kendrick Lamar compared to like the older school, like even we rewatch the Super Bowl halftime show a lot, where they had Dr. Dre and everyone.
That was the best halftime show.
And even
I've ever seen.
Seeing so like good. Kendrick's part of that, it's like, man, like this guy's so cool.
Yeah.
Like, and it's on like so another talented. Like level of like creativity. And, I do think that like the it was the first time where I wasn't looking at my older friends being like, oh, you just don't get it yet. I was the older guy not getting it.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's weird because like, I think me and Kendrick were like the same age or something like that or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
he's definitely,
But that, I think when you're making music and you're doing it in like a way that is like you're on another level, maybe even before your time or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas like Compton in the sense of like MC8 is featured on this album, and MC8 is a legendary rapper from Compton. He's in the Menace to Society movie after some guy gets shot, and he's like, come on, motherfucker, like that voice or whatever. Mm-hmm. They use it in San Andreas and shit like that. He has such an iconic voice and is such an iconic rapper of that time that it's cool that Kendrick got him on this album, but it's also very clearly gang related from like Crips and Bloods and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Compared to like what the Game was doing with Compton, like music maybe like 5 years prior.
Yeah, for
it
sure.
It sounds completely different to this.
Well,
right?
I find like that Kendrick era, because I grew up like on like the 90s stuff. Like I love like Mos Def, like Biggie, Gangstar, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I found like there's very few of them, but Kendrick was one of those artists who was new school, but he still had that old school flavor.
Totally.
He was still like.
Yeah.
His beat choice was great. His lyricism was on point. His lyrics, like, you'd have to hear him a few times to really get what he's saying.
Totally. That's what there's a lot. That
I'd be in the shower, like, fuck.
Totally.
You know, like, you know, that's even better than I thought.
And almost a year later, too.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, I find, when that shit happened, J. Cole was the one where you have to shut the fuck up because you're like, okay, if you, like a hip hop purist in the sense or whatever, especially like a white kid from Western Canada saying this or whatever. Like, you like what you like.
We're
pure.
Again, we're all qualified to be talking about this.
Exactly. We're definitely pure.
Good breeding programs over here. Solid breeding programs for sure. But that was fucked up. My uncle said it to me at a wedding. Sorry, at my grandma's funeral one time, and I thought it was the funniest thing I ever heard. So. Poor Jackie never met my uncle before. He just walks by. It's like, good.
That J. Cole album that came out around the same time, Born Sinners?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. Incredible.
Exactly. And I think that I laugh at my at myself now because when I looked at that, I was like, oh, that's so very clearly harping on, like, you know, very clearly saying what he means to be saying, like, you know, you can look at that and track it all the way back from, like, you know, Guru and KRS-One and all that stuff or whatever, right?
Nas was
exactly
a huge influence on
like,
all that, yeah.
Huge. And then what you have with Kendrick is me kind of turning my nose up at something when I was, like, which is silly because the first time I heard Outkast and I had to sit and listen to Andre's verses a couple times to understand what he was saying and go, oh, my God, this guy's so original and so talented and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Only for a few years later me to look at somebody else who was doing something
yeah
on their own and for me not to, like, look at it. So I always look at this as Kendrick as an artist for sure, and this album specifically as just me being like, the like, this is my beginning to my old head. You know what I mean? That's like to the point where I'm like, oh, wait a minute, you have to stop and you have to listen to what these kids
for
are
sure.
doing.
I wonder if part of that too is because like his lyrics are so good, but also like the beats are so catchy. So we obviously he had a lot of mainstream success. So
for
I wonder
sure.
if that a part of you was just being like, well, fucking everyone likes this guy now.
But
like,
I know that definitely has something to it. But I also think the beat selection, because the beginning of this album starts off very like lo-fi, if you will, kind of like you know, shorter. It doesn't get into like Good Kid, M.A.A.D City, where it, like kind of kicks you in the ass with like those like hard beats and hard
backseat
freestyle.
That kind
exactly.
of stuff, yeah.
It takes a few songs to get to there. So I was sitting there like, you know, coming up on like M.O.P. or Big Pun and like, you know, slap the shit out of you kind of music or whatever, that I was like, why are like guys that I like that are like into like the hardest shit really into this?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I was so blown away that it turned into, I called it titty bar music for a long time.
Titty
bar. Yeah, like exactly. The bitch, don't kill my vibe. The fucking the Lonely Stoner, Lonely Day, all that shit. I put all that into the same category without really looking at individual artists and being like, and taking like, what they were doing, whereas you're right, because if I saw like Absol or Schoolboy Q, I was like, that's the shit immediately, because it was identifiable. And for whatever reason, like this one kind of like skirted around me a little bit.
Because he did have big hits that were like that vibe, that were like everyone. Because I listened, even listening to this album, because this one and To Pimp a Butterfly, like that, like his era where he was huge was like right around the time I was in university. So I remember we would fucking listen to these songs like fucking at parties or whatever, which is like so funny when you hear like the in-between stuff. I was like, this is like pretty like hardcore for us to be bumping, like doing MDMA here or whatever. But then he has like the, you know, the big hits
was,
that everyone was,
it was weird
listening to.
I feel like he was in a way, it was stoner rap, but it was also like, I find a lot of the stoner rap is kind of like, you know, it's like you're listening to it while like slipping into a coma, but he still had like kind of that.
I like storytelling. Like if I'm going to get stoned and listen to something like that, I want you to like paint a picture for me and like put it there. And I think that like, you know, he's like really fucking capable of doing that, especially with a lot of the stuff of his, you know, talking about his family, especially and stuff. Like, I think that, you know, and you could do that or just, tell an interesting story. Big L does it like you know, fantastically, in the two albums that he got to do, but like I can stay into it and understand, and like I think I can connect. It's almost weird, this is the way that I kind of do comedy, in the sense it's the same thing. It's like I think that you can connect with people as long as you can you know, kind of get to the same like page with them, or at least talk about something relatively relatable.
What
I mean, and I think a fucked up family is something that I don't know, most people can
no
can
for
can
sure
get
and
to
it's like
something.
You know, you it's a part of your story, just like how
for
his
sure
upbringing Compton was a part of his story, you know?
Yeah, and I think like I don't, maybe that's like for me or something, but I'm trying to like, if I'm gonna like really identify with something, then it's like it's got to connect on some level.
Yeah,
and I think that like for that, like you know, for those reasons, Kendrick fucking he does. And it's funny because I was kind of like keeping him at bay, but then he became like so undeniable and hits just kind of kept coming that whatever reviews I was giving about this album to my friends, and they just thought I was retarded, they would come in. And do you remember Nostalgia with Pusha T?
I think
it was on the next album that he did, or so, maybe two later. But it's just a black and white video of them walking down an alley, and it's the greatest hip hop song ever made.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then King Kunta comes later and shit like that. And I've got friends just staring me in the eyes, like, so Kendrick's what?
Kendrick's not
the greatest record rapper of the next generation or whatever.
King Kunta was such a good song. Yeah. Like, such a like
hit.
A such a bop, but like also like a really fucking good, like lyrically, like a good song. But
good message.
But they can like put it on. Like, I remember dancing to that in the club and shit like that. Like, everyone fucking loved that song.
You know, when it works in the club as well as it does in a house party, that's, you know, and it's like, I don't know. I feel like he's just shown such insane range that it's really hard to not respect kind of his body of work.
Totally. And at this point, I think it's like relatively light. I think that we're in a weird time where music is kind of being done differently now, where like the album is almost a thing of the past, and people are kind of making more shit like four singles,
just
and
the
stuff
hits
like that. Streaming's becoming, you know, well, the reason that they make money and stuff, so maybe only put out a hit rather than, you know, those, you know, full track bangers. But, you know, that being said, like, you know, Kendrick and Cole and these guys are still, you know, like making you know, albums where they're younger contemporaries, where you see a lot of these kids now. Like, my Facebook feed is filled with rappers that I've never heard their names of with diamond necklaces that are massive because they're like a billion streams of, you know, pay X amount of money or whatever, right? But I don't see...
there's not longevity in that.
Well, exactly, right?
Like a guy like Kendrick and Cole, you know, they built this body of work. You go back to their old mixtapes, some of these songs are, like, fucking incredible, and they've barely seen the light of day. But then you get, you know... Here One Day, or like Here Today, Gone Tomorrow, kind of like one hit wonders.
Totally.
There's going to be more of those than there are J. Cole's and Kendrick.
It's like equivalent of comedians that get huge on TikTok, but they have like 5 minutes or whatever. So they get like all this attention and success, but they don't have like the body of work and the experience to actually make, you know, a long-term career out of it.
Like, they can sell tickets, but...
Yeah.
Well, I think you're selling the product before there's like a product to sell.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, if there's you know, there needs to be like a enough shit there to do, right? And I do think that another thing for Kendrick that is like something to be said, where like the hip-hop performance, I think, fucking like lacks for a lot of guys. When some people can come out and do it well, they do it at like another level.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I've seen the Wu-Tang Clan, and I mean, bless their hearts, I love them and I love that music, but it's essentially nine guys on microphones that are, you know, like rapping with each like other and stuff like that.
Yeah,
exactly. Talking with your hand over the mic and shit like that, which is insane because you guys have been performers for 30 fucking years now.
Yeah.
This should be a well-oiled machine at this
point. For sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when somebody really gives a shit about their live performance and stuff like that, and that's not to be said, the Method Man is not the greatest fucking performer in hip-hop music. Like, they're individually, they're the shit, but when they're all on stage together, you can't help it. Like,
I feel like rap...
Smoke blunts and rap together.
Right? I feel like rap concerts are tough.
Because it's, you're not... I mean, there's something that's, you know, when you're going to, like, a rap concert or whatever, you're not... thinking necessarily about like the performance aspect,
well,
but then you there think, when you're there, you're like, well, I'm not paying to just listen to what I can listen to on
no,
a fucking
party. I think
on Spotify.
I think there's definitely two ways to look at it, right? Like, if you're gonna go and party and just be like in the vibe, that's one thing. But like, I think I'm a fucking nerd because like, if I'm going to hear a rapper, like, it's like you want to hear them be able to do like those skills live. R.A. the Rugged Man, a legendary MC, still playing kind of bars, and you know, he's definitely like an underground dude or whatever, but his thing is like how technical, you know, he raps and stuff. So if you do go see you know what I mean, I've seen like Talib Kweli, another fucking another legend too, and he'll bring a DJ with him, and that's the whole thing, is like, you know, watching like a DJ actually cut live records. And when you can kind of see some of the old school guys like showing you like, this is what it's all about, rather than like the party club app vibe of it, where like,
where it's like everybody's just doing
it's
this.
A rapper essentially rapping over like a track of his own shit or whatever. Like, all that stuff sucks. There's like a way to do it really good and there's a way to do it really poorly. And I've seen some of Kendrick's live shit, and I would everything to go see him.
Yeah, he was that
good. Well, exactly, because when I'm paying tickets for a concert, I want some sort of visual spectacle.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I take poor Jackie to the fucking bad ones.
Never
lived it down.
But like, even going back to like fucking the Super Bowl performance, and Kendrick's part of it, like part of what made it like so cool was how, you know, it was visually so interesting.
I think it was most interesting. Like, you know, coolest part of it, like with the marching band and all that.
That was
shit.
Easily the best Super Bowl halftime show I've ever seen.
100%.
Because normally they're just fucking corny. Mm-hmm. It's like someone who's kind of hot right now.
Yeah.
They're doing all their hits.
Yeah.
There's 7,000 backup dance. But that one, it was just, man, it was just the music.
It was really. Yeah.
50 Cent was upside down for some reason.
When fucking Eminem comes on. My God.
No, that was wicked, man. That was wicked.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
I think it's a weird thing to you know, to think of now, that this shit is like it's like a 40-year-old art form. You know what I mean? But it's still like the culture of the youth. You know what I mean? And
rap, you say?
Yeah. I think old? In so much ways. Well, like punk rock especially too. I think there's a lot of similarities between the two styles of music or whatever. And some that I like, you know what I mean, I'm like drawn to both of them or whatever. But the one thing I think that is like the main thing for it, it's hard to say now, obviously, because they're 40-year-old art forms and we're adults now or whatever. But like, I mean, when it's done the best, it should still be the music of the youth.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like, I do like enjoy the fact that it is being done in like in its own way by a younger generation, where like, I'm not supposed to understand what they're doing and shit like that. And like, I do,
yeah.
You know, so like, I accept that or whatever. But if let's say like the last generation of like the golden age or whatever, if there's going to be like a last superstar of that era or whatever, and if it is Kendrick, then I'm happy, you know, to give him the nod. I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said,
thank God, he's gotten your nod now.
Yeah. It's important.
Well, I guess you should hang him up.
Yeah, he has it all now.
No, but I feel like
this is my Grammy. This is my This is my nod from Johnny on the Show Me Yours podcast.
Gonna get a Grammy on the wall there. No, I feel like how you say like you kind of feel like the new school kind of slip away. I think it's supposed to.
It's totally
you're not supposed to get it. Like, you think about like the stuff my parents were listening to, and they hear the shit now. They're like, what the fuck? You know, I think you're supposed to. You're supposed to keep that. And I feel like, too, it's like when I listen to Good Kid, Mad City, it's nostalgic, you know? Like I said, I texted you earlier. I was like, I used to bump this in my minivan on the way to my white high school, you know? And it's like, and that was just such a fun part of my life that, like, you know, every time I hear, you know, I had a lot of good times with that.
Yeah, I think it's funny because this one, like, me hearing it a couple years after I graduated, so I kind of thought that, like everything that was already made up until that point was already in the bottle or whatever. Because when I was going to high school, it was like, Dr. Dre's 2001 or something, great, Explosive and all that shit or whatever. We were walking down the hallway kind of doing the exact same shit. You know what I mean? Just like the generation before. So it's like it's cool that you brought this one in because for whatever reason, this is always like the one that makes me like laugh at myself. Mm-hmm. Right? If something can like shine a light and like hold a mirror up to your own pretentious bullshit.
Yeah.
For me, it's this album.
And even like the dark messages or the dark songs behind it, it's still like it's a feel good album for me. Like
when I hear it, it's the way that he delivers it and just like the storytelling aspect of it and how good he is at conveying a message.
Yeah, and I think that like when you can add like positive, like if you can come away from a positive outlook on something that is so negative, obviously with you know what I mean, with life not being the fucking, you know what I mean, as easy as it could have been or whatever, right? I think like that's what good storytelling is, right?
And I think that's like part of his talent and why he's so popular is again that he'll have like really lyrically really complex and telling really dark stories, but again puts it to like a beat that's, you know, you can dance to, or that makes it feel lighter than it is.
Totally. Yeah. While actively hiding the fact that David Blaine might be responsible for that. I mean, the body of work and everything that he continues to do is pretty, you know, impressive whilst, you know, covering up probably the greatest terrorist attack of the 21st century, right?
It's
fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of balls juggling in the air.
Definitely.
Yeah,
Tim Hortons, the Catholic
Tim Hortons, Catholic Church.
He's got 14 Timbits up right now.
He's juggling a lot of Timbits.
I love the skits on that album, too. Like, did somebody say dominoes?
Like, where my dominoes, motherfucker?
You better not be fucking around with Shireen.
Again, harkens back to the golden age of hip-hop albums where the skits now, right?
Yeah, like totally,
And for any listeners out there that are still tapped into the hip-hop scene that I might not be as familiar with, please send me some shit. I would love to listen to some new stuff. I'd love to be proven wrong. You know, I mean, I just obviously am an adult and we have our own you know, goals and things like that we're striving for, where I think finding new music... I would love that. I would love that. I have a lot of friends in the punk rock community and a lot of music there. Makes its way to me a lot easier than hip hop has in the past little while. So please get me back into the game. So now Joel here on our 20-minute, you know, tail end of the episode here. Mm. We're gonna take you to a darker place.
Okay.
Darker than 9/11?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We can get darker.
Yeah. Joel, everything is darker than 9/11. It's the greatest day.
It's the greatest day of my life.
Jackie went to Disneyland. Right?
I went to fucking Disneyland. I saw my first episode of Survivor. Like, it's an origin story.
It changed everything.
It really did. For me, I mean, in that way, everything, I see my life as pre 9/11 and post 9/11, but kind of
before,
like,
Christ, after Christ.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there like a linchpin in your life? Is there a moment where you can decide like, oh shit, that's where everything changed?
That's where everything changed. Wow. I mean, honestly, man, moving out here
was
a huge culture shock.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gonna be a wet dream situation.
Wet dream. All right. No, I mean, like, you guys know, like, you guys are from out west and coming here, there's a lot of different culture, different whole different language.
So much so that we are allies now.
Yeah.
Back home, there's
we would
no
be
BC
adversaries.
Yeah. Alberta camaraderie. You guys can go fuck yourself.
Yeah, yeah,
keep
yeah.
Keep your bullshit red plates off our roads.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh man, during the pandemic, when all the Alberta plates flooded Vancouver, it was absolute pandemonium.
It was like war. Oh, yeah.
People were fucking slashing tires
and
shit. Like,
go home. It got pretty. It harkened back to a darker time.
My friend from high school moved to Vancouver, and I think he like parked wrong or something. And some guy came out and he was like, "You fucking redneck piece of shit!" Like, just like,
oh, no.
Yeah. So that's a very real thing, the Alberta plates. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. It's like,
I get a target on you for sure.
I love the people from Calgary are like, "We're gonna go home to our liberal city with tales of bigotry from Vancouver."
Yeah. That's the thing. But
well,
even like
funny
here,
because when we went to Calgary, we're like, "Oh, we're going to Calgary." You know, there's probably gonna be rednecks, Confederate flags flying everywhere, and it's
ready
a pretty
for
like progressive.
It was the most
city.
It's probably the most
liberal
city.
It was totally the cleanest city that we've ever been to. There was a piece of trash ever.
Other
anyway,
than Montreal, I will say. Montreal is a very
and not
clean
only that,
city.
Like they were like incredibly like progressive, but like they were in a really good way where dirty jokes landed, blue collar shit.
Totally.
The crowds in Alberta are great.
I've never killed harder. Like in Edmonton, I thought they were going to carry me off stage.
Yeah.
This is fucking crazy.
No, and I feel like too, people in Alberta, they don't take themselves as seriously as like here.
Totally.
Or like a big city like Toronto where people are kind of like, ooh, you know?
Fucking Vancouver. The crowds there are so up their own ass. Like I think that's why you see so many like great comedians in Vancouver. And even like comedians who have lived and traveled all over the place, but they choose to remain in Vancouver is because the crowds. Dino Archie, Chris Griffin, Simon King, is because the crowds there are so tough. Mm. It just by nature of that makes you a better comic because you have to fucking.
Yeah, I feel like you should. You develop like a thick skin, but it's also like you kind of develop like a sense of knowing the room like really well. Me and Jackie ran two shows at one time, and one of them like East Vancouver, like Burnaby, and the other one in Kitts Beach. So, you know, if you're going to do like housing crisis, you know, there's something wrong here kind of material and it's not landing in Kitts and you're like, I wonder why me shitting on the landlord isn't landing in Kitts. You're like, oh, because you are the landlord that we're talking
it's
to.
It's like the rich people.
Where you could go like on, and then on like Wednesday night, we would do a show completely across town, do the exact same material and have fucking ovations. Right.
Well,
so you
and
really got to
like,
kind of know.
Cause
and
we
it's
ran
so,
a
it's, yeah, the segregation there is weird.
Because we ran a show in Coquitlam too, which is about half hour, 40-minute drive outside of Vancouver, like a suburb sort of thing.
Yeah.
Not really a suburb because it is kind of like a little city in itself.
But essentially, I know what you mean.
But you could do no wrong there. Like, they were just so happy
the show,
that there
like
was something going on that they could go to.
I find that's why, like, smaller towns, like in Ontario, like even like Ottawa, like
even out here,
people are just happy to be out.
Yeah.
Have you done that Brockville show yet? Or are
that's
you
on
going
Thursday.
Oh man, it was so good.
I'm excited, man. Chad's a good dude.
Yeah. Shout out Chad Noonan. He's gonna be on the show for sure. Next in a couple weeks here. He's coming.
Yeah,
out.
He's gonna be in town in a few weeks.
Yeah.
We're gonna
and,
have him on.
And like I mean Hudson and all that stuff. It doesn't matter where you are. I think in Canada, but I'm sure that like kind of goes anywhere. It's like if you live in the city, then I think that you like part of your identity is attached to the city, maybe, and like what you can laugh at. Or I don't know. There's something weird about like the climate in the city compared to when you go out to a place that doesn't have anything else going on.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And you travel or whatever for a Friday night, and there's people there that are like, "Fuck, like thank you for coming here."
Yeah,
you know what
I
mean. Like you get this like different energy from people that are like, you know, waiting to hear you talk some shit and kind of applaud you for it.
Yeah.
I would fucking tour small town Canada.
I mean, like, which is what people do, really, in the States and stuff. All the tours, it's all mostly in small towns, you know, unless you're like huge, like fucking
for
Tom
sure.
Segura, and you're doing arenas wherever you go. But for the most part, like road comics are doing small towns.
I don't like that. I think it's definitely going to burn us out, and we're probably going to, you know, die in a motel room because of it. But
it's not a very glamorous life.
At this point, that's the dream.
Yeah, truly.
And sell my left nut to be fucking to be in Cornwall right now.
Yeah.
Like.
It's kind of sad to say out loud.
Yeah.
I like regular people, and I will collect all your money $5 at a time.
I'll do it for a meal and a beer.
I really do.
Yeah.
Oh, I've done worse for less. What's the worst gig that you've done? So did you, because I mean, as a Calgary native,
yeah.
Moving out here in for university, did I don't know if we've ever spoken about this. Did you start in Calgary? Because we started with a lot of great guys from your neighborhood.
So I started here.
Oh, okay.
I started like 2020, actually.
Mm. Wow. That's like right around the same time
yeah,
we started.
Yeah.
So yeah, started out here.
You just get a foot in the door and then the fucking pandemic shuts you down? Or,
yeah,
you
know? I mean, like, it was like July, so it was like kind of, it was right when kind of bars came back, so shows were coming back. Yeah.
We had, we did our first shows, like, it was like end of 2019, beginning of 2020, so it was like 2 months before the pandemic happened.
Yeah.
We were like, this is really cool, and then everything shuts down.
Yeah, it was weird.
But also in Vancouver was a lot more lenient as far as like restrictions 100%. And stuff. I think
yeah,
you guys had
Montreal was.
We had a curfew.
Yeah, we were. Or no, we weren't.
We got good. There were people not coming out, so we had there was a lot of spots and shit. So
No, we I had a few friends move out to Vancouver just because of how lockdown it was.
Yeah,
here.
Charles was there for for a good time.
But yeah, and then what I did like because shit was locked down, I did. Shitload of online open mics.
Oh no shit.
We did some of those. How what did you think of them?
I mean they suck. Yeah. But what like the one I did it was like you have 5 minutes of material and you get 5 minutes of feedback from everybody.
Oh, okay. That's
so
cool.
It really helped me write. Mm-hmm. And like I think that was really valuable at the time.
That's cool. Like a workshop also, was it open to audience? Or were you guys kind of doing it for each other?
It was really just like a Zoom call with comedians and like most of them were it was pretty much all American comedians.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it was people who didn't know me. They didn't give a shit about my feelings. Yep. If a joke sucked, they'd tell me. You know, and it kind of got the wheels spinning a little bit. And, like, when shows came back, I had, like, I had, like, a decent amount of material I could kind of play with, you know?
Decent,
that was
but,
the thing with, the like, the Zoom shows is that, like, they suck to do, but it was still better than not doing anything 100%. Or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, I remember doing them, and it was always like, God, this sucks. Like, trying to tell people to unmute their mics and all this shit. Oh, but, like... It was still more valuable than not doing anything.
Well, yeah, exactly. When we did them, like, I remember we would do them alone, or you did one alone, or I did one. I can't remember exactly what it was, but then we did one together where we just had, like, a case of beers and just, like, the laptop out, and it was just you and me kind of hanging out.
Yeah.
And that one was, that was fun because we were
I think we were always
doing
together doing, I don't remember ever doing one
Is
alone
that right?
in my
yeah.
apartment, but
maybe
I think...
I can't remember, but like we would, they were
because I remember for us it was always like this isn't too bad because we're laughing at each other's jokes or
for
whatever,
sure.
and then it's not like because the thing with those was like you would be in the atmosphere of like a show, you're like having drinks or whatever, laughing, you know, and then you just shut down the laptop and you're just like alone.
Yeah, you're like half cut in your living room, like fuck.
Yeah,
but, I mean at least like there's no bomb walk of shame. You know, because
totally,
like, if you bomb in your room, you close it, you can just go to, like, it's not like you have to, like, say bye to anybody, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but, yeah, no, honestly, like, I understand.
You ever put your jacket on and the hood is just kind of going over as you're
under
the door?
Oh, and you're avoiding eye contact?
Oh,
my favorite, I think I've told you this before, and I say it a lot, but my favorite is when you bomb when you're filming a set, and then you have to collapse the tripod. And everyone's looking at you like, really?
Yeah. You're like, oh, we'll see that one on Netflix.
No
like,
No shit.
Yeah. No, there's, I don't know. I think they did suck, the Zoom open mics, but the value in it was just writing. Mm. I actually met, like, I made a lot of connections from, like, comics in the States that, like, I've ran into in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it was, that's, I don't know, it's kind of cool to, you know.
Well, I think, like, I'm talking about this with somebody that, comics are very different and all cut from different cloths, but the ones that that I like, I think the reason that we all get along or whatever is that you can look at that as this sucks, this is the only thing that I can do right now, or you can be like, this is where the work comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? Because if you can actually look at bombing and bad sets and shitty crowds and whatever the case, you can look at it all that way, or you can look at it like I'm getting better, you
know for sure
I mean? Mm-hmm. And tightening up different shit and trying a new joke and all that bullshit or whatever, right? And if you're not going to do it, then you don't get the opportunity to do it, right?
Yeah.
So you have a good attitude about looking at it, because I think a lot of us like negatively, you know, just talk shit about every online experience you can
everything
have, and I think that's
totally.
A good way to it's a really positive way to look at it, because at the end of the day we had each other. And I think that's what a lot of comics don't have, definitely, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So, like, if you can find a way to stay motivated and, you know, and do something, right? Like, I pitched Jackie a joke this morning that I'm like, oh, now I'm done my work for the day.
But it's also, I feel like, too, I was at a point in my life where I was like, if it's not this, like, the fuck else am I gonna, you know, it's like 100%. I feel like you really gotta, you know, you really gotta look and hear the stories from people who have made it, where it's like, man, I ate shit for fucking 7 years, you know, and it's like,
totally.
It's the only, there's only really one way to get there, and you gotta just,
and
know.
I think when we decided to move here, even though it was like the, primarily it was motivated by the cost of living, but it was also secondary, was also comedy. And I think since moving here, we're like, okay, well, like, we fucking have moved away, moved to the other side of the country, like, away from our families, fucking, you know, put everything on the line just, you know, for this. It's like, okay, well, there's really no backup plan at all.
Yeah. There's,
so kind of have to just do everything that you can, even if it means doing a fucking open mic for three people in a basement.
Yeah.
That's which we did this
made.
Year,
yeah,
this
exactly.
week. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
where the sausage gets made.
For sure, right? And I think that, you know, you can bitch about it, or you can enjoy it, because you're going to look back at it like, these are the fucking, you know, these are the days Thanks, where, you know, like that everybody talks about, like, you know, that you kind of like, you know, that you go through. I have a fucking career, and I have another thing that I can fall back onto, and there's other shit, you know, that you could do, but I was so goddamn unhappy doing all of those things and just maintaining like a great paycheck and whatever. Small families thrive on the income that I could be making. That means nothing to me if you're not having fun and enjoying what you're doing while you're there, right? As far as I know, I'm not David Blaine, and I don't get another opportunity to live again.
You didn't do 9/11.
You didn't.
I didn't do 9/11.
As far as you
For
know.
Fuck's sakes, guys,
it could
I didn't.
Be a, yeah, there could be some sort
I
of...
I see what you're saying on the internet.
There could be some sort of evil Johnny running around.
There is a 12-year-old Johnny DeVito alter ego that was on that plane that day.
There is, there's a parallel
Josama bin Laden.
Josama bin Vito. We were on the wrong side of World War II, on the wrong side of 9/11.
Hey, oh, death to America.
Oh!
Hey, oh.
Oh, my God. I mean, it took us a long time to get there, but we got there. Yeah. And
that's the title. Hey, oh.
Hey,
oh, death to America.
Oh!
Like Mama used to make.
Genocide, like Mama used to make. Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
my mom was the first one to spit on Mussolini's body. Just before she blew the guy.
Yeah, that's why she was spitting on him.
Absolutely. So, Joel, now that you're the established Montreal comedian, do you have any plans? What's the next thing for you?
Good cue, man. I mean, just trying to, you know, get better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just keep having fun with it. Keep creating.
Yep.
Keep bombing. Keep learning from it. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you got to just take it one day at a time, one show at a time.
Yeah.
I just want to eventually have an hour of comedy that I'm proud of is still funny and it's not stale.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, New York is kind of the goal.
That's the same. I'm curious. So your style of comedy, because I'd say like we all kind of have the same tone in that we lean towards darker and dirtier, but your style of comedy is definitely different from me and Johnny's, where we're both more long-winded and you're more one-liners.
Mm.
I'm curious your like process of like coming up with jokes and also just like the process of building time. I feel like, you know, if I think of a funny idea, I can stretch it into 2 or 3 minutes just by, you know, taking them on a little walk or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas like you think of a funny idea and it's, you know,
30
done.
Seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because I always loved punchy comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always was really drawn to like, you know, like Mark Norman was a big influence when I first started. And I think when I started doing a lot of open mics and like watching a lot of open mics, I noticed like a lot of the reason that so many people were just bombing was because they were kind of ranting. They were putting in unnecessary details. There wasn't enough funny.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I remember just kind of really trying to cut fat and really trying to learn how to write jokes in those, you know, because I feel like too, a long joke can be formed by, like, say, 10 one-liners,
totally.
As long as it makes sense and kind of links
up.
Yeah.
So, I think, like, I always look at that as, like, the bit. You know what I mean? I wrote a joke this morning that I haven't tried it yet on stage, but I'm kind of almost proud of it. You know that point where you're like, this is a good... But in my notes, what I'll do, rather than tightening up that joke, I'll have 5 other ideas around it, and now, like... where I'm at now, it's editing, and I'm going, hold on a second, let's find out if the joke you're proud of is good enough here before we start,
for sure,
you know, building out the grander.
And
idea.
I feel like too, like once you have it and once you start repping it, mm-hmm. you're only gonna subtract from it.
Totally,
oh,
for sure.
You know, because you want to focus on the funny, make sure that's only.
Yeah.
So yeah,
the
thing
for us though is that we could be using that one liner to set up a story. So that could be. That could be a huge punch to,
for
you
sure.
know what I mean, to something or whatever, right? Yeah.
But it's subtracting, like you said, and that's been like a big thing for me the last like year or so, because I used to be like, okay, like this part of the joke works, this doesn't, let's keep workshopping that part, where now I'm like, this part of the joke works, this doesn't, I'm just going to get rid of that other part mm-hmm. and leave it on what works or whatever. Yeah.
And I think too, like, you know, the short form style or like the one, it's not for everybody, like I get that. But I think the better you get at it, mm-hmm. the more you'll be able to kind of build. Because like when mm-hmm. I start like building 5 minutes with that, you got to write like thousands of shit jokes to really.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I don't know, just got to try to get better at it. And I do have some stories. Yeah. I just kind of, if I have a longer set, I can kind of work them out a little bit. But
the
way I saw it was, hey, man, you're up there. You got 5 minutes, like fucking hit him in the mouth kind of thing.
Totally.
Fastballs.
Yeah.
I think it's good. I thank God for roasts, because that's where we get the opportunity to do the joke writing exercise in a setup and punchline kind of way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think for both of us, it's, you know, there's a funny topic there, but I think we're from the school of thought, like, well, there's a lot more to say on this topic.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But then granted, looking back at a lot of sets of mine, there's, you know what I mean? As far as, like, I've gotten off stage and been like, fuck, I don't really know how I did there. And I've had comics look at me and be like, well, they listened.
Yeah. No, for sure.
It's one thing to be able to tell the story and kind of demand their attention or whatever. But to do comedy in the way that you do it, like, there's a way, the way that I do it is the way that I like to do it. But the
absolutely.
Comedy that I like to watch is the shit that you guys, the shit that you do.
I feel like, man, like, one-liner
shit.
There's no wrong or right way to do it, right? Like, I think everyone should have their own sauce.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And even, like, when I watch, like, if you watch, like, a really good, like, storytelling comics, the pops they get on mm-hmm. these stories are just fucking, like,
absolutely.
Shake the room, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, and there is something in building that tension and then it releasing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's really, you got to focus on the voices you're drawn to and just try to play around, fuck around.
There is also like no like harder bomb than if you get into a 5 minute story and it's just none of it is landing. And you're like, I have 4.5 minutes
and, you're like,
and I can't get out of this now.
You're like, the later line, the later line won't hit unless I do this part. Yeah.
And you're doing act outs and it's just. <you're>
Shout out to Tim Williams. I don't know if he invented the term or just we're the first ones to hear it from him.
Bombing with act outs is
the
most
long
humiliating.
Oh my god! You can like hear like the squeak of like your shoes on the
You take a long walk for a short drink of water, and
that's
it's the worst.
I mean, definitely like bombing just sucks overall.
Yeah,
but there's definitely something where. You know, like, even if you're just trying to kill time, like, you know they're not going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
You start anyway.
Yep.
And you're like, fuck you guys.
I'm
you know,
and then
I'm
in your head,
truth.
You're like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
You're like, why did I just kickstart this train right now?
I'm up there like, I think I'm going to get a sandwich on the way home.
Literally, do I see the light? No, haven't lit me yet. All right.
Yeah.
I've done it so many times where, like, I'll judge the audience before I even get up there or whatever. Well, like, well, you guys are going to fucking like me anyway. So I'm just going to go and do whatever the fuck you're going to do. And then you walk off. You're like, why the fuck did I do this? That's part of the journey, right? It's part of the
for
fun
sure.
And if you're afraid of the bomb, then you're fucking never gonna go any further. And if
absolutely.
I think if you only you know, cater to the shit that you know works and you don't let yourself experiment enough to bomb, then you're not gonna
absolutely.
Grow enough either,
yeah
so.
Absolutely
yeah.
I found like the most growth I had, I mean, there's still obviously a long way to go, but the most growth I had was when I really prioritized like kind of the shitty mics.
Sure.
Totally. Yeah.
And just stuck up. I don't care if it's silent for 4 minutes, you stick up there and you fucking try new shit, you know?
Yeah.
And like when I started doing that every single week, I felt like I was a lot more confident just because I didn't give a shit how it, like not complete, like I just didn't care if
you're
I bombed.
More
yeah. There's like, because that, well, you can see it in the scene here, like that mic will, those mics can change who you are as a person if you're not getting opportunities outside of those mics to, you know, and seeing good audiences and seeing, you know, how that goes. So if it doesn't sour who you are as a person, because when you go there, you can have this attitude like, well, fuck it anyway. Nobody gives a shit or whatever, right? So you can see that kind of stuff. But if you could use them what they're for, and which is exactly what they are, is you essentially getting comfortable on stage, you
absolutely
running through your material,
yeah,
you feeling the bomb, and you kind of understanding what that's going
to
be like.
And also just giving yourself a leash to kind of riff,
fuck,
you know?
Because
it's like you build that confidence just by trying.
Every comic needs low-stakes rooms that you can fucking riff a little bit, do a little bit of crowd work, fucking deviate off of what is like, you know, essentially like lyrics, you know what I mean? Like recited that you've recited 100 times over again. Add something a little bit new to it.
Or just like getting comfortable enough on stage where you can just basically like be yourself on stage, which is like a hard thing to do. Like if you know, when you go on stage, you're doing your act or whatever. But if like you're a funny person to be around, I think that's kind of like the mark of like a good comic. It's like if you see them on stage and you're like, this is just like I'm hanging out with them. Like again, Dino Archie is like 100%. The perfect example of that.
100%.
But that takes a really long time. And the only way to do that is to just get up on stage.
Just
as
do
much
it.
As possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's, I think that was like the idea for me or whatever. Is like, well, I'm always like, I'm like Uncle Johnny or whatever. I'm the guy that you can have a beer with. But like that, you know, but it takes time for you to craft that into the, you know, into also like, you know what I mean, the great comedian that you want to be or whatever, to make it seem effortless, right?
And I feel like too, it's like
takes a little effort to make it seem effortless.
I feel like too, sometimes you run into rooms where they don't want to hear jokes.
Fuck no.
Like crowd work's killing, but they don't want to hear like structured material. So it's like you can tell who does those rooms and who doesn't, because sometimes the crowd's just like, fuck your jokes, just be funny.
Exactly.
You know, be funny in the moment
rather than
prepare something funny. You know?
Yeah.
And you only learn that by
doing those rooms.
By doing
the
shitty rooms.
Yeah, you gotta fuck it and you gotta eat it.
You gotta eat it on the chin.
I mean, there's a fucking, there's a few people out there that could do it great and like it seems like they've never bombed or whatever, but those guys have too. So.
Yeah.
Everybody. There's nobody is immortal. I think that's another thing you gotta remember too. Any comic, man. In your opinion, it could be the greatest comic of all time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Has eaten shit and been humiliated in front of.
That's like my
absolutely.
Favorite thing, like listening to podcasts is hearing those
comics
telling their bomb stories, and it just feels like a little good, like inside of you. You're like, okay.
you guys have a favorite bomb story?
Yeah, probably. I think for me, my favorite one was it was in a first weekend that I was getting. So I'm also like, you're very excited. The club's putting you on. And
you're on edge a little bit though. Mm-hmm. Like
super
not,
on
yeah,
edge.
Yeah.
Hosting, so you're working the whole time, right? You got two shows, and the early show of a Thursday, so it's the start of six shows. And I walk onto stage, and before I get on stage, I'm looking at the audience, and you're in New Westminster, which is a suburb of Vancouver, which the crowds there can either be non-existent or that room can be full. It could be blue collar, it could be old people. You have really no like gauge for it, especially with the comic that I was working with that weekend. This guy definitely would skew to like a younger audience. Shout out JC Cryas, big fat party guy, fucking awesome. Malik Ellisol from Calgary.
Beast. Yeah.
Very good dude. He's middling. And I'm hosting, and I'm already nervous about the set, and I look out behind the curtain right before I go on stage, and I see just a sea of gray hair. And in my head, I'm like, they're going to fucking hate
that
me.
Makes me nervous,
and,
too. Yeah.
You know,
I'm
right
the same
there.
Boat. Yeah.
And granted, like, it shouldn't, because now that I've grown since then or whatever, like, I'm a, you know, I can do blue collar stuff. I'm a fucking, you know what I mean, with a journeyman plumber and all that stuff. I can connect with older people, actually, a lot easier than I can with a group of 18-year-olds I performed for in front of last week.
For sure.
So now, like, I definitely needed this to get over the hump. But my problem was I decided that I was going to bomb before I went up. And, there's so much actually that builds up to that too, because I look out the curtain and I get scared, and then your headliner and feature act come through and they give you a little tap on the back like, get it, go get them, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now I'm like, okay, that sucks too. And then
in
the
those
House of
at doing those weekends too is the worst, because you want to impress the headliners so badly, because usually they're from the States or whatever, but at the end of the day, they're not fucking listening to you.
They don't
care. Yeah.
No,
this
no,
is
no,
the, this is the lowest paid
yeah.
club on their run. This is blah blah blah. They don't give a shit. They're in the back of the room.
They don't remember your name.
They don't.
Yeah.
It's been announced seven times.
Exactly.
They don't remember your name.
By the end of the weekend, we would become good friends, but not through my comedy. Just So all of that happened. And then Vancouver House Comedy has the longest video intro to a show.
Oh, it's like really? 5 minutes.
Ever fucking seen? There's two videos. It's, so first one is
it
like a
takes
clip.
Up two different songs.
Yeah, it's like, a clip video of all these comedy, like great moments from comedy movies. Like, do you remember in Old School where they all drop the, they have the ropes tied to their dick and the cinder blocks?
They drop the cinder,
So they have just all these like hilarious clips from movies. Fucking Miss Doubtfire with the fucking...
It's all these random movie scenes.
Pie in her face, all this shit.
That's one song.
That's one.
And then it fades out and starts again.
Into
and it's
the
just
fucking
like,
Rock Boys with Jay-Z and like a, just like a...
It's just like a montage of Vancouver.
Yeah.
Like there's the Canucks playing.
And
there's
you're
like
in the West, so you're not even in Vancouver. It's just disingenuous as well.
It's
so, but the whole thing. So
ridiculous.
Now you're sitting there for like 5 minutes. Like they're gonna fucking hate me. These guys are listening, and you're like, oh fuck. And I go out there, dude, and I just and hosting too. Just
hosting
start
stuff.
Off.
Yeah. As a bombing as a host is.
And I fucking
lonely.
sucked so hard.
Yeah, and it happens so often, too. Because you're not even, like, even if it's not, like, bombing, like, you warm them up enough that they're, but it still feels shitty.
When you
you're
feel
like,
them
dude.
Not like you,
yeah.
And you gotta keep
it
going back up.
Oh my God, that's the worst.
Malik was, he had kind of come up, he'd moved to the city, and he'd kind of seen me on, like, a bunch of, like, smaller shows and stuff like that or whatever. He was definitely kind of like doing his own thing, and you could tell like this kid's about to pop, right? Like everywhere he goes, he's killing.
I think he had already moved out of Vancouver by that point. I think he was back in Calgary, and he came back just to do that show.
Okay, that might have been right too, right? So he'd been kind of seeing me working, but I'm not getting nearly spots. So for him, he was like, you know, he's happy for me. You're getting your first whole like, weekend or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just the look on his face when I brought him on for that first show was kind of like, this is learning, and I'll never. We did have a conversation. I think that night or at one point that weekend or whatever of just, you know, I'm having good sets, I'm having bad sets, I'm doing this and that or whatever, and he wasn't listening to anything that I was saying. He just told me to enjoy this part of it. He worked so hard to get to this point where you know that he's at now, that he kind of looks back and like his like kind of starting it was kind of all a blur because you're so focused on like the end thing.
Yeah,
that, you know, we're lucky that we had each other, we had a fun vibe, we had a fun crew and all this and that or whatever. So it was a really cool thing, like, and we shake the bomb off. The bomb doesn't matter,
but the
hang there was important. And the thing that I took away from that was like enjoy this part.
Yeah,
and
the people.
Was, you know,
yeah,
so
man.
So that was a cool one for me. So it was a bad bomb and a good lesson.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think my favorite like story of a bomb. That's just like because we always say like comedy is like the great equalizer or whatever. So if you go into a show thinking like you're hot shit, like you've been killing or whatever, like it's going to come for you.
Yeah.
And like my favorite moment that it just like encapsulated in one night is that I was in a roast battle and won like the belt. Like it was I'm winning like a roast battle is such a high or whatever. And so
I wouldn't know.
I know. Just take my word for it.
Yeah.
Go get there, kid.
And like
for the listeners, Joel got smoked by Jackie no more than 2 weeks ago.
It was a close one.
If you lost, you got smoked.
But so literally like got the belt strapped around me like on top of the world. And then at the same time, Johnny is hosting a mic down the street. And so I literally still have like the imprint of the belt on my clothes. I'm like walking down
never
the
came,
street,
sweetheart.
Walking down the street, just like feeling like it's so high on comedy. Like I can do no wrong. And so Johnny's hosting this mic and it's towards the end of it. And there's like one more comic left. And Johnny's like, if you want, I'll just throw you on right now. And I was like, I don't know. And then I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm the best. You know, I'm going to go
come
here.
Come off the bench.
Yeah. And then as Johnny he's on stage, bringing me up on stage, at that same moment, someone in the audience faints and falls out of their seat. And now there it's like a rush in the crowd where everyone's going to like attend to them. There's like ambulances being called. There's all this commotion. But Johnny's on
stage.
I'm
in a dark club with a bright light in my face. I don't see any of that.
He has no idea.
I just see Jackie just doing this. And I'm like, Jackie Agnew.
And he brings me on. And then I just have to do 5 minutes while literally paramedics are rushing in.
Paramedics with a stretcher are walking into the club.
And you're like, that's for me. That's for me.
It's Oh, it was so bad.
I'm dying up here. Yeah.
This was a bad. This was a bomb on tremendous levels. Yeah. As this is happening, shout out Darren Turner.
At that point, I was like, let's, you know, because Johnny was already on stage, so there was no stopping it at that point. But I was also
on the club owner too, because when I go to off stage and Jackie was on there, I'm like, holy fuck, should I stop the show? Yeah. And she's like, hold on, like the ambulance is coming, and you're in like Overdose Alley of Vancouver, so like the response time there is relatively quick. Like,
for sure.
In the time that I brought Jackie up to halfway through her bomb, paramedics are already walking through.
And it was like at that point, I was like, I didn't have. There was just like my head, like there was so much I had gone, the adrenaline was all over the place that I didn't have the wherewithal to just like work with the situation. Yeah. I just like went into material.
No, but
and just stayed into material. But hold on, dude, like it gets better, man.
The rest of the crowd's not looking at you.
Exactly.
Like, they're fucking
no
trying to make sure
is
no one's
paying
dead.
Attention
honestly,
to me.
Like
at
it was
all.
Like that, but this is happening, and this is a fucking 30 comic marathon, mic, mind you, right? So like, I mean, this is by the end. I'm just happy that Jackie's there because I just want somebody to fucking hang out with, right? Like every comic is getting up, doing their time, getting the fuck out of there, and washing the bomb off or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a guy who's closing the show out. Shout out, friend of the pod, Derek Turner, Scorpion King, our fucking homeboy. The whole show, he keeps coming up to me and talking to me, and I'm like, man, fucking chill out. Like, I'm trying to do my job here. And he's like, my therapist is in the room. I'm going to revolutionize stand-up comedy tonight.
Mm-hmm. And I, like, specifically requested to go last because he's like, I'm going to have that headliner energy on this open mic for my therapist.
You can imagine the 30 comic open mic.
Show's done.
Nobody wants to see
that. Not only is the show done, but the therapist was the first responder. Like, he was like, I'm kind of a doctor.
Jackie gets off stage. I bring up your headliner for the night. And Dara Turner is up there. And he's trying to connect with this audience when the guy that he's supposed to be doing the set of his lifetime for is on the ground delivering CPR to a fucking woman with a seizure happening right now.
What a nightmare.
It was the fucking greatest. God.
Holy shit.
Oh, that was just
yeah.
You know, there's some good bomb stories, there's some bad bomb stories.
What's
dude.
Your favorite bomb story?
So a couple years ago I did a CJEP gig.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Western Canadian listeners, CJEP is like ages 16 to 20, the thing they do in Quebec.
It's like basically grade 11 and 12, basically. It's between high school and college.
Okay.
Yeah.
They do CJEP.
It's like where mandatory before university.
Where they kind of like pick something they're going to focus on, like is prepping them to go into
work experience? But
no, you're in school. You're not picking a major, but you're picking something to focus on. And it's kind of.
But basically, it's only a thing here in Quebec. But. It's pretty much like the biggest shithead age. Like it's like 17 to 20. And so I do this CJEP gig and it's in an auditorium that fits 300.
Nice.
First of all, it's at 1 p.m.
Love it.
On like a Wednesday.
Oh, no.
On a Wednesday. Nobody knows there's a show. It's this 300 person auditorium. Maybe 30 kids show up and they're all scattered about. Mm-hmm. And I'm fucking supposed to do 20.
Oh, no.
And I'm first. And so I go up and these kids are young. There was a host.
Okay.
They liked her. I go up and like, I mean, I don't know what.
You start
like,
slinging
I,
one-liners.
I start doing. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I start trying to pepper them, and man, like these kids are young. Like they don't get it. And then I start trying to fucking do some. Where are you from? You know. That's going even worse.
Where am I from? I'm in the school district. Yeah. Motherfucker, I live around the corner.
And then this.
You
like,
went from out of town here.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So
who
you guys
doesn't?
Doing, you guys on the apps? You guys, I guess your Snapchat is sharing child pornography.
Who's got hot parents?
Yeah.
Like, and then this
boss got a small dick. I work for myself.
And then this like 17-year-old girl just starts heckling me.
Oh,
and so I start like, and this is the thing, the whole time like I'm trying not to show it, but like I'm getting heated. Like I'm like talking shit back.
Yeah.
And the entire crowd has her side because they know her. I'm just some fucking asshole who like walked into their school. We had to, before the show, we had to eat in the caf. With the kids who are going to be at the show. So it was just a nightmare.
Mandatory?
Yeah.
What are they?
Yeah. They're like, oh, we'll feed you, but like you got to eat in the cafeteria.
We'll feed you. Yeah. We have a whole cafeteria.
And so.
Meals on wheels? What were we going with?
It was pretty good. I'm not going to lie. I would have ate well at that school.
Yeah.
But I'm going back and forth with a 17-year-old. And then eventually a teacher walks over to her and goes, hey, please be quiet. And I was like, at least someone has control of this room.
Someone's police in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
Social studies teachers.
I was like, that's security.
He's dying up there. Give him a break.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did that. I was supposed to do 20. I probably called it. Actually, I don't know. I'm pretty sure I ate it. I ate the whole 20.
Yeah.
And then got the check in the mail. But
that's
yeah.
That's not bad. If you got the check. Check cleared. Like, that's the only bummer about all three of these stories is Jackie had to do it for free. So.
Yeah,
yeah. There is so well. I'll just do this one quickly because I know we have to wrap up. But the other one that I was debating between this one or the one I told is we last year, my dad hired us to do a bachelor party for one of his friends.
Both you guys?
Yeah, and so he lives in Vernon. So we're like, this is great. Like, my dad is a huge supporter, right? Yeah. Like, every time he can, he comes to see a show. And up to this point, had only ever killed in front of him. So in his mind, we're the greatest comedians in the world.
He rented theaters in Kamloops and sold them out and crushed. Like, he caught us in this weird... Other than, like, the first mic that he saw us do?
Even then, he loved... He came to, like, our second open mic we had ever done. He brought a GoPro to film it, and he
Jackie's
loved
just doing
it.
And he's just fucking filming the GoPro.
And he, and he
like
was
a fish eye.
Literally, and
talking
he
about cum.
Loved
early material
it.
Was covered in cum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just loving it. Yeah.
Loving
yeah,
it.
But
Splash Zone.
So a friend of his had this bachelor party, and it's, like... I mean, it's, like, they're all guys in their 60s, right? It's, like, a second marriage. Kind of situation.
Yeah, that's an old bachelor party. Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And
these
so
boys,
he's
there's,
like,
"There's money in this room."
So my dad had took it upon himself to be the organizer for this bachelor party. So they're going to have dinner at this sports club that also does a lot of comedy shows.
Okay.
And so, and usually the comedy shows they do are like private events. So it kind of worked perfectly. He's like, I can bring you guys out.
So those people that do the private events will shut the lights off, put a stage in the corner, do shit
well,
you're supposed to do. But this not,
well,
not,
so
not this.
Yeah.
So not only were, he was getting everyone to, pay a certain amount of money so that we could get paid. He also covered the gas. We stayed at his place. Like, it was a sweet
gig. We drove out from Vancouver, made hundreds of dollars, paid. Shout out Andrew Crone, very funny Kelowna comedian. He came close out.
But so we get there, and it's like they're literally eating dinner as we're performing. Let me get there.
Nightmare.
Okay.
And so it's like the lights are on, like this is dinner time for them, and then we come in to do a comedy show, and it's like the stage is set up just like in the middle of the room, so it's like it's a super weird setup. And so
banquet vibes, bright lights,
and there's like so we get yeah,
it was wild. It's,
you can see it, you close your eyes, you
buddy,
can see
like
it.
You're just under fluorescence at 6
it's
eight
like
p.m. doing comedy. It's not right.
It's
not
like
right.
A relatively small room, but yeah, just like fluorescent lights, like, and the seating was like they had all these kind of half booths like along the wall, and the wall was a mirror. Right. And so anyways, so Johnny is hosting the show, and he goes up, and it's like pulling teeth, like trying to get them to
the
even.
The ideas we're all going to do about 20, I think. Get out there.
That was yeah, we're all doing 20. Yeah, and so Johnny goes up, and it's rough. And then he finishes, and he's about to bring me on, and my dad kind of comes up to him, and he's like, I'm so sorry, but their dinner was like a burger bar, like a build your own burger. And as Johnny was doing his set, all the stuff for dinner had been brought in to the table.
Oh, so it's a buffet kind of.
Yeah. So he's like, I'm so sorry, we have to stop the show after Johnny just finished his hosting
set. They're
bringing
plates of bacon and pickles and shit. These guys are about to build burgers here. So after my set, they're like, hey, we're going to slow down whatever momentum you thought you had.
My dad's like, I'm so sorry, we have to stop for everyone to build their burgers.
45 minutes here to eat some
burgers. You're going
to
do the same 10?
Well,
when I got back up there, I was like, fuck, guys, like, I don't even know how much more time. Like, I just got kicked in the dick. I was like, I don't know if I wanted any more time.
So they all build their burgers, but Johnny's done his hosting set. Then we're all sitting there for another 20 minutes while they all go up to build their fucking burgers and then go back, and they all kind of sit down. And so we start up the show again, and Johnny does no time.
Zero. At this point, I'm like, I've already been kicked enough. Today,
yeah, I got paid for 20.
Yeah.
I did 20.
And now, guys, you guys all know and love Tim, apparently.
Yeah.
So here's Jackie.
And
it turns out nobody
knows
Tim.
So then I go up.
Nobody knows your dad.
Well, so I go up and I'm doing my
it's
set.
So good,
and I like have Kate. I'm like, this is like my dad's crew. So I'm going to cater my set to have all these jokes about my dad and my family in it. And I do a couple. And then I'm like, who here knows my dad? And it's like the bachelor and like one other person. Now this looks so bad that they're all like, he's just got us to pay for like his daughter.
That's what it was. Like, boyfriend. As the bomb starts, you're like, these people just agreed to put up like $600 for three comedians to come in here and bomb. Thank God Crone was there, because Crone's
fucking
hilarious.
As I'm performing, they're all fucking eating. Mm. And like, so all of them who have their backs on their table, their backs are turned away from me. And I'm like, this is rough. I'm performing to their backs. And then I notice they're watching me through the fucking mirror.
Yes, there's a mirror. She's 10 feet behind them. And they're just looking in the mirror, eating their burgers, looking at her. Like, the fucking vibe.
It was so rough.
We got
and
paid
then,
cash, and we all had a good laugh and a hug after the show. Oh, but it was still daylight. And Crone's like, no, I'm going back to Chloe.
I felt so bad. I don't think we're going to do a hang after this.
I'm shaking this one off.
Andrew Crone, who is a fantastic comic out of Kelowna, and he has a special on YouTube that has like fucking 200,000 views. He's really fucking funny. And so we had him come in to close out the show, and thank God we did, because he can murder in any fucking room. So he did really well, and it justified us being there, because we were just sitting there like, oh, I'm so embarrassed.
I was eating it. They had a guy there who was like,
who knows my dad?
And then like having to like get back to his place, because we left right after the show. My dad had the whole rest of the bachelor party to stick around to. And then we were there late at night, and he finally gets back. He's like, so that was interesting.
And I was wanting to punch him. I'm like, what do you mean that was interesting? You just fucking set us up for that. He's like,
I mean, you guys were up there.
What the fuck?
And he did.
We drove 4.5 hours for this.
He did even tell us, like, he did warn us before. He's like, it's an older crowd, like, might not want to get too, like, dirty with it. And we did not listen to that advice at all. Yeah. So it's kind of.
Well, in my head, I kind of thought that was the case, but then you start bombing so hard.
You pull out whatever you use.
I'm like, this is usually the best stuff. And but I they had like one guy there that was like, it was a bunch of 60-year-old guys. You could tell there was one guy that was like, you know, late 30s, early 40s. It's like in the group now, and he's just jacked as fuck. So you're like, well, everybody's wife's fucking this guy. So at least he was there so you could pull back to the one jacked guy.
Yeah.
And had he not been there, that would have been the bomb story that I told.
I feel like, too, sometimes, like, you know, early on, like, you get booked for a gig, older crowd, don't do dirty. It's like, all I fucking have is dirty.
Yeah.
Like, what am I supposed to, you know? Yeah. It's like, there are some situations where you're like, okay, maybe in a couple of years I'd be able to learn how to work this.
We're not doing 20 minutes of clean material. There's no fucking way. Yeah. Like,
I would take the gig and then probably never work with that person again or whatever, like, and try to do it. But, like, at the end of the day, like, that's where you come to the point where you're like, oh, show promoters aren't actually listening to us. Because why would they even fucking ask us to do that show? You know what I mean? Because, like, I'd love the opportunity or whatever, and I probably would say that I would do something. Because in my head and in my heart, like, I would love to get to a point where I could do like corporates and construction events and all that kind of stuff whatever, like on that side of the fence. But it's gonna take work to get there.
You gotta just start wearing blazers.
Dude, my hat. There's a bunch of things that I could do. If I could change my appearance just a little bit.
Same act, but with a blazer.
I should just drop bags of cocoa like a fucking trail of breadcrumbs on the way to the stage or something like that. Like there'd be like a way to do it, and I want to get there. But the way the style of comedy that we do and the place that we perform doesn't necessarily, you know, lend itself to that kind of clean blend of
I got you, bro.
So I think like that road is going to be longer and more arduous, I think, than going to where we want to go.
I mean, he's just doing it.
Yeah. And then I find it difficult because the things that I find funny like aren't it's not clean.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I can't write something funny that's clean when it's not anything that I think of or whatever.
I think you just write what you write.
Exactly.
Well,
and you go from there.
That's it.
I'll burn a few bridges, book some corporate gigs and never get booked again.
You should be, whether funny or not, you should be you at the end of the day.
That's it.
Exactly. And not everybody's gonna fuck with it. Not everyone's gonna find it funny. But the people who do, those are the people you need.
Exactly. It's not something like I wanted to like make exclusively my thing. I do think that with like a minor amount of editing, then some of my stuff could be clean. Like when I moved here, Chris and those guys were saying like, it's crazy that you're clean, but you do shit like that. And I was like, you guys think I'm a clean fucking comic? That's fucking insane. But it does kind of like give me a little bit of hope that maybe we could, you know, fucking like, you know, pay off a couple credit card bills or something like that one day.
I racked up
a couple dollars on our card.
Not to mention the line of credit.
Hey,
there's a lot of debts that could be paid
off.
But
yeah.
Shall we wrap it up?
I also pay the bill. So, guys, Jolie, we're going to roll the red carpet out for you. Tell these people what, who you are, where you're coming from, and what you got going on.
Oh, shit. Okay. Joel Slavik, from Calgary, Alberta, currently living in Montreal. You can see me all over the city 7 nights a week. Brockville, April 11th. I don't know when this comes out. Brockville, I know you're listening. Brockville, I'm coming for you. yeah, man. Follow me on Instagram at Joel Slavik. That's where I post a lot of show dates. So, yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
Hell
you
yeah.
Rule.
Thanks
the short
for coming
time
out.
We've been
Thanks
here,
for
man.
Having
like,
me out.
You're the best bucking bud that we got out here.
No,
so
you guys
I
are the best.
Yeah,
you guys are the best.
This is fun.
This is the first time of many. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it.
Sweet.
Thanks,
Peace.
Guys.
Peace.